You are listening to the American Society of Concrete Contractors. A special thank you to the ASCC leadership team and ASCC members for providing this opportunity for some great industry discussion. We're talking about concrete pavement overlays. This is episode one. I didn't know you could do that. We have with us Michael Haft with K&M Concrete Construction. Michael has spent 40 years in the industry, 32 years with a major retailer in property and building development, and prior to that, he owned and operated a concrete construction company. We also have John Hansen, Senior Vice President with the National Ready Mix Concrete Association. He has spent his entire career in one part of the construction industry or another, as a general contractor and also as a specialized concrete contractor. He enjoys how his work now takes him across the country, helping to steer practices in the concrete industry and promoting concrete wherever possible. Thank you, Michael and John, for joining us. We'll start with you, John. It does seem like the Midwest has been a leader in the development and validation of the concrete overlay, but there's still a lot of work to be done.
We do a lot of things in the Midwest that are innovative in concrete in the way of the overlays that we're going to talk about today. But as if we, I talk to people in California or in Arizona about that, that's a foreign topic to them. So we're struggling with technology transfer in the construction industry today like we have in all of history. We can develop something new and it takes a long time for it to be implemented.
I think, as far as PCC or concrete overlays, the Midwest has really been the leader in that industry and in that process. I think that's due partially to our abbreviated construction schedule that we have up here seasonally. We're also the benefactor of having several professional agencies that have been on the leading edge of concrete development in general. One of the very first concrete overlays was in Indiana in 1918. And we've been fortunate to have the Concrete Pavement Technical Center in Iowa that has been on the cutting edge of concrete materials development and means and methods and processes. We've also had some state departments that have been very successful and progressive in Iowa and Minnesota, Colorado, that have really made the investment.
You know, Mike, I might interject too that sometimes we even look at it, we think it's political, because for many years as we tried to move the technology for overlays forward in mainline paving, for example, we would get pushback from people who would be supplying material to these industries and say, why would you talk about repairing a road with 3 or 4 inches of concrete when you could build a new one with 8 or 10 inches? And as you alluded to, in an abbreviated construction season, you oftentimes have to have repair work or you give that up to another material. So the concrete overlay was a response to the repair work in the areas where you couldn't budget for a full reconstruction, but you could budget for a repair work. So we take a look at some of the politics that have come into play in moving technology forward, and I think the overlay has been a good one that it shows that concrete is a good application for repair work and not just using a material that was the default material.
Let's talk about some misconceptions. It seems that the design professionals and the customer or the property owner both consider having an existing asphalt surface as a liability to doing a concrete overlay. They assume it will need to be demolished and the site cleared, and that this will just add to the project costs.
Agencies look at repairs and to do overlays as a repair method. The cost for an overlay, because there is less material used, is a cost savings than a new construction. And then we see the fluctuation of building materials that are affected by such things as oil embargoes and environmental issues. So there's a fluctuating price point for both materials used for paving, and it's dangerous if you only have one option. If you have two options, you have a place to go if one material happens to rise or fluctuate more than another, and that's been a big plus in the overlay market, is that we give the agencies, the owners, a choice of material and looking at what the current situation may be in the marketplace for the cost of those materials.
Socially, it's become more attractive with sustainability being such a hot button for a lot of different people and a lot of different agencies today, where you can take an overlay preparation and avoid all the demolition and disposal of the existing roadbed, the regeneration of that material into aggregates. With an overlay process, you can eliminate just about all of that. You take the selective demolition down to generally pretty small areas, just where you have to make a transition into maybe existing fixed buildings or set elevation points.
You know, Mike, that's a good point. And we've been together at the shopping center show in Vegas, and we've talked to property owners. And, of course, the big comeback that we get from all those is they look at it, they say, I didn't know you could do that. But the point being with that group is that they've made an investment in that pavement, oftentimes an asphalt material. They've put it down. It's created a base for them. And now to talk to them about not taking that out and throwing it away or finding a place to dispose of it, they have made the investment that they're using it as base material and we're paving directly on top of it. And so I think from an owner's perspective, when you look at investments you make in your property, how nice is it to know that you've bought that paving material that's there, you've used it, you've worn it out, but now you don't have to throw it away, that you can pave directly right on top of it if it's in suitable condition and
right,
and everything is good.
So if an existing asphalt surface has failures, it's uneven, there's fractures and cracks, how can a concrete overlay be effective without those same failures showing up on the concrete surface?
Good question. I love that question because we've talked about the overlays in the conventional markets that started with airports and streets and local roads and secondary road systems, and those were all put down with slip form pavers. And here's where we start to get into some of the uniqueness of the paving equipment and the material. A slip form paver puts down a concrete mix that is a very dry mix. We talk about slump, and I always say we could talk about sag. What it is how stiff that mix is, and the slip form paver actually molds the concrete when it comes out, so it has to be a fairly stiff mix. So when we look at parking lot applications, though, the game changer has come in the mid-80s with the laser types of screed materials. And there's a couple of manufacturers that make these laser-guided screeds. But that concrete goes down at a much wetter mix or a slump that's closer to a 4 compared to a 1 on a numerical scale that a slip form paver would be put down with. What we have found in feedback from contractors who have been putting down overlays in parking lots at a 4 slump is that the fractures that are in the asphalt layer down below, with the vibration that occurs with the laser screed, the paste or the wet part of the concrete actually will kind of sink into those cracks and fill them. And so we think that base in the condition it's in has to be evaluated at face value. But the truth of the matter is that when you place the concrete on it, the concrete kind of goes down and locks it in and actually builds that base up. Time and again, we've shown pictures to contractors, engineers, people in the industry, and say, what would you do with this? And they go, we'd rip it out. And then we'll come back and show them that we have overlaid it with concrete and the road is performing perfectly because we're using that old asphalt as base.
You know, some of the things that we've we've found that have been very effective in the overlay when you get into areas that have significant degradation in the asphalt is using a controlled density fill, which is basically, it's a very low strength concrete or cement and sand concrete mix. So it's flowable. So, and it's relatively inexpensive, and we can go in and take care of existing depressions quickly. It's a material that'll seek its own level and prep that area so that when we start the mainline, what we call mainline paving with our laser screed, we don't have those big deviations in substrate.
The NRMCA published a book that's available for free download online. It's called The Guide to Concrete Overlays of Asphalt Parking Lots, and that's full of documentation and how-to information so that concrete contractors can do these overlays effectively.
We took almost 100 years of information that we had and we put together into a concise 60-page book that is a guideline for engineers to design overlays, but also a guideline for contractors to build them. And as Mike alluded to, there are some depressions that you need to fix and fill, but there's also some guidelines within that book that say if the depression is within this range, that you simply let the overlay material, which is concrete, fill that depression. So where you would a lot of times spend previously, in previous approaches, you'd spend a lot of time fixing those depressions. Because concrete is a semi-fluid building material and it's flowable, it could be 3 inches thick in one area, it could be 4 inches thick in another area, but the beauty of it is that with an overlay of concrete, you're setting that to a line at the top end, not at the bottom end. Asphalt will follow the profile down below. Concrete at the level line that we set it with the laser screed corrects all those imperfections down below. And that is really the plus when you look at a final product of asphalt versus concrete. There's a manufacturing plant in South Sioux City, Nebraska, who would run their forklifts out of the building to load semis in their parking lot. Their asphalt had deteriorated to the point, with the point loading of the forklifts, they had to drive very slow because they were tipping their loads. They overlaid their entire area with concrete. And to quote one of the guys who runs the warehouse, he says, now we can have races with the forklifts because we don't have to worry about those loads tipping. And that is a very simple way of saying how that top-down leveling and not reflecting always what came up from the bottom created a nice flat surface for them to run their forklifts on.
You know, and a value-added benefit of maintaining that existing work, that existing asphalt, is the all-weather work platform it provides. So you avoid that open time from when traditionally we would tear out the existing, reconstruct the base, reconsolidate the sub-base, and then take the chance on hitting a rain or inclement weather, where now we maintain that work platform so we can basically downtime is minimized as much as it possibly can be.
I think one of the things, too, from an owner's perspective, we hear this time and time again, is we're just so tired of constantly being in a construction mode in our parking lot, whether it be seal coating, repairing, pothole filling. I've seen them, and I'm sure most people have seen them, where you go into a large parking lot and they, even in the wintertime, have these heaters that they'll put on top of an asphalt parking lot. They'll heat the patch, they'll pull it out, they'll put it back in. That's a very expensive repair. And it's done quite frequently because those point loads and those asphalt flexible pavements create those areas that sink out of sight and they have to be repaired. Owners are tired of that. They're tired of that continual cost of maintenance, and they're saying, do we have a better way to do this? One project in point, we did the Pinehurst Country Club in Denver back in 2014, and they said, everything looks good, we like what you're talking about, but it's got to make sense for us dollar-wise. So we had the ability to take 20 years of their maintenance records that their property division had kept, and they knew what they had spent in the last 20 years on their asphalt repair. We then took the bid for the concrete overlay, and we plugged all this into a computer program that does a life cycle cost analysis. Their cost at that time to do that project was right in the neighborhood of $700,000. The asphalt bid was about half of that. But they had intended, and they intend to continue to own that property like they have for many, many years. And over the next 20 years, if they did nothing different than what they'd done in the previous 20 years, they would have spent right at $1.5 million on that parking lot with the overlays of asphalt, the seal coatings, and all the maintenance they have done. They looked at the concrete option, which was going to be about $700,000 up front, but at the end of 20 years, very little maintenance that was going to be involved in that. And they said, now we can see it in dollars and cents, and this is kind of a no-brainer for us as we can look at now the life cycle costs that we know we spent this for maintenance on the asphalt. We're not going to spend it for the concrete. They bought the concrete.
But there is a lot of to be said to marketing to those equity owners, and goes far beyond just the dollars. And those primary issues are business interruption. You know, the interruption that you would have for interim life cycle maintenance, maybe two or three times with asphalt over its lifetime of service. And the interruption to daily traffic, daily truck traffic, daily vendor traffic. We know in retail especially, their year is filled with annual sale events or monthly sale events, which tend to drive, you know, significant traffic. The other thing that John and I have discussed at length over the years is the general liability value to an owner having a predictable, safe, level surface that doesn't require that interim maintenance. And I've not found a resource that can actually quantify that into dollars and cents. But it stands to reason that if the surface is flat, drains well, and is not subject to those routine interruptions for seal coating or overlaying, that the general liability risk falls dramatically.
You know, Mike, you and I have discussed this, and I'm, you know, my situation and having a daughter that's handicapped, and I'm a big advocate of ADA compliance issues. And if you look at existing parking lots, and if you can get an owner out there, and as you're doing an evaluation, I'm one that says, and you know you're not ADA compliant there, and you know you're not ADA compliant there, and you start picking these things out. And if you really look at the intersection in a lot of parking lots, between a concrete curb and the asphalt, or a concrete sidewalk in the asphalt. Those may be ADA compliant the day that the asphalt people pull out of there, but they're not ADA compliant a year later. And that is because the nature of the two materials, where the concrete is rigid and it doesn't sag and compress, where the asphalt is not rigid and it sags and compresses, all of a sudden, you have a whole area in front of a building that's not ADA compliant with you having asphalt abutting to concrete. And it's an invisible issue until someone brings it up to an owner.
Right.
We had a contractor in Wisconsin who you and I both know who was getting a lot of pushback on the issue, well, concrete cracks and causes a trip fall issue. Well, that was given to the owner by someone who was trying to sell them an asphalt parking lot. And we know that concrete cracks, yes, we're not going to sit here and just say that it does not, but it does not often separate and come into two different planes to give you a trip fall hazard. But we did point out that if he'd go to his existing properties and look at his transitions between concrete sidewalks and his asphalt, that he probably had hundreds of lineal feet of trip fall hazard in his parking lot that no one had brought to their attention.
In concrete construction, we plan for those cracks. I mean, we literally induce the cracks so that they're linear and parallel and perpendicular, so that they are much easier generally to navigate compared to asphalt, which is left to basically random crack and much more subject to compression, wheel depressions, which don't exist at all with a rigid pavement.
See, it is rigid. And it's like spreading out a load. It's like if you take a tabletop that's solid and we push down on it, we're spreading that load out because the load is being dispersed across that rigid pavement. Contrarily, if you have a flexible pavement, you put a load on it. It's like putting a pressure point on a foam bed. That pressure point is directly down, and so that's why you get potholes in asphalt, because it's transferring the load straight down where concrete spreads the load out, and it ties right into what you were saying about we designed the construction joints, the control joints, we put saw cuts in it to induce the crack, because we can control then how that load is transferred with a rigid pavement.
And to add to that is we have to remember that in concrete versus asphalt, the top side of the cross-section in concrete virtually never changes because it's rigid. It never changes. A lot of what you see in deformation in the asphalt isn't necessarily being driven as much by the underlying substrate as it is by the change in the soils in the substrate, and then ultimately the failure of the surface due to imposed loads. Concrete, on the other hand, tends to bridge those. And, you know, in the Midwest, we see that, we go through that every year, right? We go through that freeze-thaw. In some areas, we go through it annually or maybe once. But we get into areas that are on that fringe, like Nebraska is a great example. They go through freeze-thaw almost continuously throughout a season. And that's why we're seeing in those markets concrete starting to pick up market share probably faster than other areas because of the issues that they experience with their asphalt in wheel depressions and potholing.
In our design methodology for any concrete pavement, whether it be an overlay or new construction in streets and local roads, interstate system, our minimum default design time is 20 years. As we go back to the beginning of what we talked about, I didn't know you could do this.
I think that's a great note to end on. Thank you to John Hansen of the National Ready Mixed Concrete Association and Michael Haft of K&M Concrete Construction. We have appreciated hearing both of your expertise.
First, I'd like to thank ASCC for the opportunity and the foresight to allow us to at least try the medium of podcast.
I do appreciate the opportunity to be involved in the podcast, that we can talk from a perspective of years of experience, Mike, you and I, and we can move the next generation forward, and I'll use an old cliche, and not make the mistakes that were made maybe by us in years past, that we get them off on the right foot. And so that's why I appreciate the podcast.